Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for the parenting slot. David Carey joins us once again. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
We did play a clip, actually, at the start of the show. There's, you know, BBC Newsroom, which is like a show for kids.
Yeah.
A kind of a news show for kids. And they gave an explanation of what happened in Manchester.
Right.
On Monday night. And given that it's a pop star and so, it, you know, I suppose things can happen. Awful things can happen. Kids might be unaware of it. This is something they would be aware of because yes. It was Ariana Grande and all the rest of it. Is there anything you can say to kind of reassure them?
I think we have to recognize, first of all, that there are probably not a child over the age of five who isn't aware that this happened.
Yeah.
Because it's been all over the media. It's all over their smartphones, et cetera. Her fan base, I don't know this particular vocalist, but is wide and far. So every child knows about it. What can you do? Well, let's keep in mind something. The vast majority of children are quite resilient, can contextualize unpleasant events like these, and it does them no lasting psychological damage, the vast majority.
Yeah.
So I would say to parents, don't become alarmed because something like this has happened. Your little ones are unlikely to be permanently damaged in any way from this. Now, what can we do as parents and caregivers? There are options. One is to wait patiently and see if the child divulges to you a question or a concern or wants to know something about it, and then go down the line of answering the question as it's been framed.
Mm.
Another possibility is to say to your child, you probably know something really bad happened over in Manchester or in the UK, or however you want to express it. Is there anything you'd like to talk about with me? Is there any more information you want? Can I help you understand it in any way? Do you have any concerns? Any of those kinds of things will open up a line of inquiry. It's not going to be helpful to try to hide reality from them, because you can't, not in this modern era. It's impossible. To dwell on it in great depth is probably inappropriate for very young children. And by that, I mean age 10 and under. We don't want to go into the details that we're seeing revealed in the television and in the newsprint and on radio. Now I notice that the names of the deceased are being released and some details about the poor mother waiting for the children. All of it is horrific. Which of us as adults can comprehend these things? Which of us in our mind can say and answer the question, why do these things happen? We don't know. I think it's very important to listen to and follow children. They will lead you where you need to go. So if your child asks questions, answer them to the developmental level and intellectual level of your child. For older children, the young teens, the mid-teens, and the late teens, we can talk about all the details as may be necessary if they want to hear. I don't think it's helpful for young children to be repetitively watching on the news or smartphones or anywhere over and over and over again video footage of the initial bomb going off and more video footage of people limping out of the stadium, blood-stained, etc. That's not helpful for young children.
No,
that can be traumatizing. Some children are very vulnerable and need to talk about these things. These are the more delicate children out there. Sometimes the very bright and articulate child will understand it in a depth intellectually that exceeds their emotional ability. And one has to go carefully and slowly. Parents know their children best. Caregivers know the children best. So let the child guide you. I also think it's important, Sean, for we as adults not to inadvertently, or perhaps, and this is insidious, deliberately, insert enemy images into the mind of a child.
Yeah.
We can overplay the Islamicist connection, the Islamic connection, the Muslim connection, and it's very easy to cause undue distant stranger stress in the mind of a vulnerable child. We want to be careful about that. See if we can't keep our own politics to the background and follow the child and answer what it is they need to know. Again, I want to reassure parents, vast majority of children are resilient. They can understand this. They know bad things happen in the world. It doesn't necessarily unhinge them.
Yeah, yeah.
So be observant of your child. Answer the questions they may ask. If you have any reason to think your child is distressed, then open it up. Hmm. Something bad has happened. We've been hearing about it in the last 2 days. Do you want to talk about it with mom, dad, or auntie, or whoever happens to be the adult speaking with the child? And that's probably all you need to do. The closer the child may have been to someone over there, the more likely they may need to talk about it.
Mm. But I think why it chimed with an awful lot of parents here was the venue in which it happened, in that experience of bringing the kids to see some pop star, or indeed dropping them off and picking them up afterwards when they've gone to see a pop star. How many parents around the country have done that in the point? And I suppose that's the difficulty with that is not just that makes kids nervous, it makes parents nervous as well.
It makes parents very nervous, yes. But we have to work on ourselves here. Although bad things can happen, the risk factor is lower here than elsewhere. But we mustn't live in the myth of some kind of, I don't know who it was, one of your presenters this morning saying lovely white Irish people who are peace-loving and cheerful and like to sing are immune from unpleasant events. You know, we're not. But we have to have a balance here. I mean, you were saying that there's a lot of parents who've had the experience of dropping their children off. There's a lot of them that are going to be dropping their children off in the not-too-distant future to our arenas and venues. What do we do as parents? Do we live in such fear and anxiety that we restrict our children from the pleasures of this world? I don't think that's a way forward. I don't think we can cripple ourselves as a society to that degree. You remember when your child got their driver's license and the time they had to go out and drive on their own, or when they go to their first disco, right? We're left home wondering, are they going to be safe? Watching the clock, you don't get any sleep. Will the door open? Will the phone ring? It's part of being a parent, this anxiety. Yeah. Regrettably, the world now brings more of it to us. We have to kind of work on ourselves, settle ourselves. Life must go on.
Yeah.
We have to retain some sense of normality. Otherwise,
what's
doomed.
The point? Yeah. On that note, here's one for a worry. I have just found out that my teenage daughter is having sex with her boyfriend. She's 16, he's 17. They've been going out for about 2 months. I only found out because I found condoms in her bag and asked her about it. She was a bit brazen about her attitude towards it and was all so what when I confronted her. She refuses to tell me if she has had sex with anyone else, which makes me think that she has. I'm devastated about the whole thing. I think she's too young to be sexually active, and I'm worried that she's going to develop a reputation if she's engaging in this behavior with multiple partners before she becomes an adult. I'm relieved that she is seemingly using protection, but just breaks my heart to think of that one time when she doesn't and could end up destroying her future. Me and her dad have worked so hard for. We've always been open about sex education and thought that we instilled in her that waiting for the right person would be so much better than a person right now. Is there any way to convince her to stop what she's doing and hold off until she is done with school and a little more grown up?
Well, I'll answer the question directly. No, there is no way. The evidence is abundantly clear. Once an individual begins to be sexually active, they remain sexually active.
Yeah.
Barring some unusual circumstances and individual variation. But the preponderance of people who become sexually active at any age stay that way.
Yeah.
The pleasure of the physiology of the act itself is overwhelming to the logical mind. Now, there's a lot of other issues here. She's 16, he's 17. She's underage.
Yeah.
He is of the age of majority. You don't want to go crazy here and start something, well, I hope you don't anyway, that could result in a police investigation.
I think they don't nowadays.
They don't anymore. Well, yeah. It depends on the parents. I mean, so this to me sounds like a sensible parent.
Mm.
Now, what also speaks out to me here, Sean, is this is a parent who's feeling very guilty and as though they've done something terribly wrong.
Mm.
I doubt that that's the case. You raised your daughter to the best of your ability. She has made a decision, perhaps at a time in her life when you and her dad don't believe she's able to make this kind of a decision, but she's decided anyway to become sexually active. Interrogating her about how many partners she may have had is a step too far.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of finger pointing and very threatening to, well, to anyone, really, because it just raises the whole impression of, oh, you think I'm some kind of a totally immoral person that sleeps around, you know. Young love is rehearsal for mature love, whatever mature love might be these days.
Yeah, please tell me when you find out.
Yeah, I'm searching for the answer myself. She's using protection. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Might be time. Not a bad idea, I think, to get down to the GP with 16-year-old daughter. Let's talk about contraceptive pills and see if we want to go down that road in addition to using condoms. Might not be a bad idea if the GP thinks it's appropriate to have a bit of a gynecological examination to make sure that there's been no damage or injury, to do the usual kind of blood tests for STIs, etc. I don't know how far you want to take it.
Yeah.
But you want to be decent and kind to your daughter and tell the truth. I'm disappointed you've decided to be sexually active at this age, honey. I really am. It's hurting me. I'm confused. I'm feeling a little bit guilty. I don't know if I failed you, but let's move forward together. Dad and I are here for you. We want you to be happy. We want you to be healthy. We don't want you to do things by accident that could interfere with your education now or in the future.
Mm.
And if you do it that way, if you proceed gently and you have a good enough relationship with the 16-year-old, I think you're on pretty solid ground here.
Yeah.
You have to work through your own disappointment. This is not a parental failure.
Yeah. Because, I mean, she said that they've always learned about sex education, thought we're still waiting for the right person. But, of course, the 16-year-old thinks this is the right person. She's madly in love.
What is waiting for the right person? I mean, sure, we tell them that. Wait for the right person. Is that the wrong message? Because if you think the person you're with at age 16 is the right person, then your parents have given you permission.
Yeah.
So maybe we should not use that kind of language. I don't know. As the
father, it's hard to tell what is the right language in that situation.
It's very difficult. And this whole business of we've been very open about sex education, what does that mean? I mean...
Well, you have to be, really, because, I mean, if you go around pretending it doesn't exist, they're going to come home and tell you a few things.
Exactly. And I don't think there's much we can be telling our young teens that they don't already know anyway.
Yeah.
So it's more about personal integrity. It's perhaps more about value and guard your reputation. It's more about raising boys to respect young women.
Yeah.
And this is something we miss very often, because for the male, it can be perceived as a conquest and go on, you good lad, now isn't that just grand? And for the girl, it can be damaging to reputation, and I can share mother's concern there. I think some honest and open conversation with the girl is necessary here. Can you stop her from being sexually active? I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to start World War III with the parents of this boy? Do you want to call them up and let them know that their overage son is having sex with your underage daughter? Family
seriously
decision.
Seriously damage that relationship with
you
the 16-year-old.
You certainly will damage the relationship, and things can go pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen, actually, and it's ugly once it goes down that road.
My son is 6. Recently, he's been having erections. This is causing him great distress. I have explained that this happens and is natural, but he gets angry and shouts at his penis. I'm worried he may get angry at school. I have said if it happens to go to the bathroom. I have all boys, and this didn't happen to them. I have bought loose-fitting underwear, etc., but these haven't helped. Is it time for a GP visit? I don't want to give my son any hang-ups about his body. I'm even unsure of what words to use. This happens a few times a day. Please help.
Well, what words to use, of course, are penis and erection. Those are the words you use, and there's nothing very complicated about that. Now, age 6, should we be getting an erection 2 or 3 times a day? That's unusual.
Yeah, okay.
This may be a sign of precocious puberty. And so I would go to the GP.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have teed it up beforehand with a phone call to the GP herself and say, this is why I'm bringing little Johnny in. And you need to sit and have a little chat with them and let's find out. I'm wondering now, are there any other signs of secondary sex characteristics such as bodily hair, armpit hair, a little fuzz on the upper lip or pubic hair, etc.? Because there is this thing called precocious puberty, and it causes a lot of embarrassment and difficulty for those that experience it. It can happen. Now, six is very young for it, by the
way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Very young. So I really think a GP visit is necessary. Obviously, this young fellow was having erections, so mom and dad are saying, go to your room. It's a kind of a private thing. What's he doing with them? I don't mean to be too graphic, but is he masturbating or...
He seems to be shouting at us.
Screaming at his penis. Go away. That will all change in a few years' time. If this needs a little more exploration, I think, to be honest. I don't know exactly what to make of it. Most important, you don't want to give your child hang-ups about natural bodily functions.
Yeah.
So use the proper vocabulary. You're having an erection. Your penis is getting hard. You know, use the words. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
It's a private thing. Go to your room. Is it happening in school? Two or three times a day they're noticing at home. Have they asked them if it's happening in school?
Yeah.
Because it can cause huge social difficulty if, in fact, it is happening in school. I honestly think, knowing no more than what we've been told, a consultation with a GP is probably the best way forward here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Is it, I mean, because it's happening with such regularity, there might be this precocious puberty going on. Is this completely weird for a six-year-old to get even an occasional erection?
No, it's not completely weird. But in the context of this, it's very unusual to be happening this frequently. Now, the business of loose-fitting underwear or whatnot, that's not going to have any effect on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can bind it up all you want. If it's going to get erect, it will get erect.
Yeah.
Is there perhaps some underlying urinary pathology present? That's something I'd want investigated.
Indeed, yeah.
And that's why I think getting to a GP, probably nothing, but let's rule out everything before we assume it's nothing. And then you'll have to proceed delicately. I would want to also know, is it happening outside of the family home? Where is it happening? Has he been talking about it with anybody else? Any other boys he knows talking about the same thing? Well, there's just a lot here. This is a big issue that could be a nothing issue.
Yes. Yeah. My son is 17 and a bit of a loner. He goes to school and does after-school computer programming a couple of days a week, but doesn't seem to have friends, from what I can tell anyway. Don't get me wrong, he never complains. He never has issues at school and seems content in himself, and but he doesn't socialise. I encourage him to arrange cinema nights or to have people over, but he has excuses that he's too tired, has school projects, etc. I'm worried for him, as he'll be entering a college stage soon, and I want him to really experience things, not just have his nose in a book all the time. Any advice?
Yeah, my advice is leave him be.
Mm.
If he's happy living in his skin, if he's expressing no signs of upset or distress along the lines of, I don't have any friends, people don't like me, I don't know what to say when I'm out, people will think I'm stupid if I try to talk in groups, etc. If none of that is happening, it means he's well adjusted in his own rather solitary lifestyle. This world has room for contemplative, solitary people still.
Yeah.
We don't all have to be social butterflies. There's no sign of distress in the boy's life, according to the parent who's writing in. I don't think you need to do anything. You might ask, son, are you lonely?
Mm.
Do you wish you had friends? Are you okay being the way you are right now? Is there anything we need to do to help you? If the answer is no, then leave it.
Yeah. It seems that, there's certainly, based on what's written there, it seems that he's perfectly content the way he is.
He's doing fine. He's a good student. He prefers books. There's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah.
This comes back to this notion that what are our children? Are they lumps of clay that we must mold into what they think they ought to be?
Yeah.
Or what we think they ought to be? Or should we just appreciate them and cherish them for what they are? And we're all a little bit different. Some are incredibly gregarious and outgoing.
Mm.
You put them in a crowd, and within minutes, they know everybody, and everyone's thrilled with the fact that they're there. And others don't like to be put in the crowd at all.
Yeah.
The shy, sort of reclusive young people or older people, it doesn't matter. We leave them be.
Because I suppose to a degree, parents would have an idealized notion. Maybe it's one they experienced or one they wish they experienced of secondary school and then college, where you have loads of friends and everything's in this kind of golden haze.
Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic. I mean, the politics of secondary school are so distorted and warped that it's very hard to navigate your way through them if you happen to be a young person whose belief systems, ideas, and attitudes are completely different from others.
Mm.
I have a young fellow like this in my practice right now, and he's just kind of the classic doesn't fit in anywhere, and he knows it. He'll have to navigate his way through the landmine that is secondary school politics, emotional and social politics. Most of these young people, when they get to university, are able to find other people of similar interests and mindsets.
Yeah.
Because the world of university is incredibly diverse, isn't stratified, clearly is not as cliquish as secondary school.
Mm.
So they have a better chance at university. We have to support them through the process.
Just going back to that six-year-old, my son is nearly four, says this texter. He often wakes up with an erection and sometimes during the day. Is this not normal?
No, that's fine.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
And someone else is going back to, we did start off talking about Manchester and how you explain that to kids. Someone's texted in to say, thank you, David, as always, for being the voice of reason in this madness.
Isn't that nice? I wish I was always the voice of reason, but...
Ah, you are.
I do my best.
You'd make a great pope. I always thought.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.